From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Kimberly Atkins, Chief Washington Reporter for the Boston Herald, and this is On Point. Maybe you've bumped into someone in a grocery store who calls you ma'am instead of miss, or you wake up to a new wrinkle that cemented itself on your face overnight, or worse, someone refers to people in your age group as middle-aged. Yikes. Aging sneaks up on us, whether we feel like grown-ups or not. This hour on Point, a midlife coming-of-age story. You can join us on air or online. So now you're middle-aged. How does it feel? Do you mourn the days of your youth? Or enjoy this as a new phase in your life. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Pamela Druckerman. She's a journalist and the author of four books, including Bringing Up Bebe, One American Mother Discovers the Wisdom of French Parenting, which has been translated into 27 languages. Her most recent book is There Are No Grown-Ups, a Midlife Coming-of-Age Story. You can find an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Pamela, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kim. Thanks so much for having me.
So as those of us who have had a 40th birthday, I will neither confirm nor deny that I have, Pamela. But we know 40 isn't middle-aged anymore, but it is a unique age. Talk a little bit about the inspiration for this book.
Well, when I turned 40, I felt like nobody could define it for me anymore. And it wasn't so much one big change as it was lots of little changes. Like, why do I sometimes wake up hungover now, even though I've had nothing to drink? Or, you know, why is there cellulite on my arms now? Who knew I could have cellulite there? And lots of little things, some of them good and some of them bad. And I felt like I wanted to write a book that kind of asked the question, what are the 40s? And, you know, what were they in the past? And what are the modern 40s? What are they for women and men today? How do you have to dress differently? How does marriage change? How do your relationships change? Why do I become impatient while scrolling down to my year of birth on the internet now? You know more in your 40s, but you're also, you know, as my daughter put it when she was staring at me once in an elevator, Mommy, you're not old, but you're definitely not young.
Oh, dear. So I want our readers to hear from you a little bit from this book, There Are No Grown-Ups. In it, you write about one of the first instances where the character realizes she might not be as young as she once was.
If you want to know how old you look, just walk into a French cafe. It's like a public referendum on your face. When I moved to Paris in my early 30s, waiters called me Mademoiselle. It was Bonjour, Mademoiselle, when I walked into a cafe, and Voilà, Mademoiselle, as they set down a coffee in front of me. I sat in many different cafes in those early years. I didn't have an office, so I spent my days writing in them. And everywhere, I was Mademoiselle. The word technically means unmarried woman, but it's come to signify young lady. Around the time I turned 40, however, there's a collective code switch. Waiters start calling me Madame, though with exaggerated formality or a jokey wink. It's as if Madame is a game we're playing. They still sprinkle in the occasional Mademoiselle. But soon, even these jocular Mademoiselles cease, and my Madames are no longer tentative or ironic. It's as if the waiters of Paris, they're mostly men, have decided en masse that I've exited the liminal zone between young and middle-aged.
And this is your perspective. I said character, but you're giving your perspective about this in this book. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, Madame versus Mademoiselle, it's a way to get into this bigger issue of how you perceive yourself, yet that seemingly doesn't always match up with how other people see you. How do folks at this age deal with that?
Well, I suspect that maybe, I don't know yet, but by your 50s or 60s, you're kind of used to be treating as an adult, as a grown-up. But the 40s are this transitional age. You know, as I write in the book, like, I still have all the jeans I wore as a Mademoiselle. I still have, like, milk in my refrigerator that hasn't expired yet from my Mademoiselle era. So it's as if, really, the way people treat you hasn't caught up. But But things really, you notice they have changed. Like you can't wear anything ironically anymore. You know, all those T-shirts that said funny things, they don't work anymore. Or you try to act kind of adorably clueless when you get into a situation, you're in the wrong line or you want to jump line. And people say, no, you know, you're a grown up now. You have to follow the rules. So a big change for me was, you know, I used to read about something terrible in the news and think, you know, someone should really do something about that. And in your 40s, you think, oh, my gosh, that someone is me.
All right. So we have some callers that want to get in on this conversation, including Teresa, who's calling from Farmington Hills, Michigan. Hi there.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Good, good. You are on.
Okay. I just want to say that, first of all, we shouldn't worry about what other people think of us. And I would like to tell everybody to read Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, because what we, you know, we present ourselves, that's how we're going to get treated. It doesn't matter if we're old or young. I take my supplements. I'm 56. So I look, you know, pretty good. I work out and stuff, but I don't care. They call me ma'am now. Yeah, at first it was awful, but I'm like, you embrace it. It's okay. We are alive and we are here. And what people go, you know, what they think of us doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's what I
want to say. Well, Teresa, thank you for that call. Pamela, talk a little bit about that. I mean, on the one hand, I think we know we shouldn't necessarily care what other people think about us. But how much of this has to do with what we think about us as our bodies change, as, you know, our faces change? How is that struggle between those two maxims?
It's interesting because there's this kind of narrative of aging in America that says you reach a certain age and you don't care what anyone thinks anymore. And isn't that wonderful? And I can sort of understand, you know, you see that in movies, you see that in conversation. The caller kind of mentioned that story. And I think it's a lie. I think we are, and I think it's a little bit sad. Obviously, I don't want to be as self-conscious as I describe myself sitting in the cafe when people started calling me madam. But I do want to care what people think. We're social creatures. I want to care about other minds. But you have to kind of keep it in proportion. And I think in the 40s, if you really examine what your experience is, it does get easier to do that. I mean, one big change, you know, I studied a lot of the kind of neuroscience and psychological research on the 40s is you become less neurotic in your 40s. So you do have, the caller is right, it's kind of less self-conscious chatter in your head going, oh, my God, what does everybody think of me? And that clears the channel. And one of the great pleasures of the 40s is you can take in more information about other people. You can really listen. It almost, you know, I almost feel like I've become a clairvoyant or a psychic. I feel like I know what people are thinking now. I'm better at picking up clues about what they care about when they're bored and also judging other people. There's this one great study called Reading the Mind in the Eyes. And you look at a rectangular picture of people's eyes and you have to guess what emotion they're feeling. It was developed to test for autism initially. And it turns out that people in their 40s and 50s score the highest of any age group on this test. So we're really good, better than we've been at any other time in our life on average, of evaluating other people. And, you know, I joke in the book that in your 40s, you're better at spotting narcissists before they ruin your life. And that alone is enough to make it a good era.
All right. Michael is calling from Portland, Connecticut. Hi there, Michael.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 58. I'm a white male. I run my own building business. And most days I feel like I'm, you know, mid-40s. And, you know, I do think that people do respect, you know, if you look a little bit older because you have such great knowledge. You've accumulated a lifetime of knowledge that a lot of people don't have. But, you know, I don't think it matters how old you are. It's how you feel.
All right, Michael, thanks for that call. Pamela, is there a difference in the way women in their 40s or above think about themselves than men?
Well, I remember when I turned 45, okay, now I'm starting to date myself, someone asked me, do you feel like you have 5 years before nobody wants to sleep with you again? And I thought, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. And there, you know, there definitely is this story in America that from age 50, not only Is nobody going to want to sleep with you ever again? But you're not going to want to sleep with them. That you sort of, you know, you close up shop from menopause, which starts on average at 51. And it turns out that that is a cultural story. It's not a biological story. Mm. And there's a lot of research showing that if you tell people that they're going to close up shop at 51 and 52, they actually change their behavior and they feel less attractive and they buy into that story. But if you're in a place or if you don't buy that story, then things can be very different. And, you know, you see in some other countries, we can talk about this, but women stay sexually active for much longer. But the other thing that the caller mentioned, which I thought was really interesting, was how he feels like he has more knowledge now. And, you know, I studied a lot of the research into wisdom for this book because I was interested in, you know, whether I was wiser. I kind of felt like I was. I felt like these index cards would pop up in my brain and with sort of describing a situation. When I was in a new situation, the index card would come and I'd say, oh, I've seen this before and I know how this turns out. And I felt like I was kind of more equipped to deal with circumstances. And it turns out you do. This is called crystallized intelligence. It's the ability to learn from your experience, to make judgments. And it does improve on average when you're in your 40s. And I think that's one of the great pleasures of the age as well for men and women.
And just in a few seconds before our break, is it how we measure youth? I mean, our caller was talking about being strong. For some women, it's about being pretty and looking youthful. Is it the measurements that are making it difficult for some?
It might be, but, you know, as you mentioned at the outset, 40 isn't even middle-aged anymore. I mean,
right.
People who are now 40 have a 50% chance of living to age 95. So 40 has moved to an earlier and earlier spot in the lifespan. And so, you know, we didn't even really have 100 years ago, there was really not such thing as middle age as we think of it now, because, you know, your chances of living to 60 were pretty low. So, now it's a different lifespan.
All right. We're discussing midlife crises, or do we even have midlife crises anymore? I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.
How much would you pay to avoid morning traffic? Why are plane tickets to Boise so expensive? I'm Cardiff Garcia, co-host of The Indicator. In every episode, we take on a new, unexpected idea to help you make sense of the day's news. Listen every afternoon on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're talking about the in-between decade and what it means to turn the big 4-0. You can join the conversation. How do you define middle age? What aspects of your life have changed as you've gotten older? Have you changed the way you dress, your attitudes, your expectations? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest today is Pamela Druckerman, contributing opinion writer at The New York Times. Her latest book is There Are No Grown-Ups, A Midlife Coming-of-Age Story. Pamela, are there really midlife crises anymore the way that we thought about them in the, you know, 60s and 70s with people buying toupees or, you know, dyeing their hair or buying new cars?
Look, most people do not have a midlife crisis. The scientific studies show that it's somewhere between 10 and 20%. And of those people, some of them are what the psychologists call crisis prone, which means they have crises throughout their lives. So they have one in midlife, too. But the idea of the midlife crisis was sort of born in the 1960s and 1970s during the civil rights movement, the women's movement. There was this idea in the air that if you don't like your life, if you don't like your circumstances, you can change it. So the midlife crisis jumped from being this idea in an obscure academic journal to being kind of part of our popular culture and part of the generalized narrative about what happens as you get older, what happens when you hit age 40. It was even treated as a kind of a biological inevitability. But of course, when in the 1990s there was a lot more research into midlife, it was found that it's not inevitable at all. But it was an idea that was so delicious and had such a fantastic name, the midlife crisis, that it could not be debunked. And so it persists in the culture.
And Pamela, compare the way that French people, French women in particular, the way they behave when they turn 40 and hit this quote-unquote midlife stage to the way Americans do.
Well, in America, especially for women, there's this idea that you should look as young as you can for as long as you can until, you know, when that fails, you kind of blame yourself and give up. And in France, they have a slight twist on that idea. They say you should try to look like the best version of the age that you are. And I really like that because it's a lot more realistic and it's a lot more calming. You can kind of be in your age. And French women kept telling me that they aspire at least to be comfortable in their own age. But they know that the nature of beauty changes as you get older. You're no longer this, you know, beautiful because you're unlined and perfect and firm everywhere. You look in your 40s and beyond like you have a story. And the kind of French twist on this is to say, well, it's this story that makes you beautiful. You know, this one woman said to me, we're not frozen, we're alive. The beauty is to see who someone is. Mm. And I think that's a big theme of the 40s, is you really have to become who you are in order to be happy in the 40s and dress like who you are, too.
You know, Judd Apatow wrote and directed an entire movie about turning 40, appropriately named This Is 40. It came out in 2012. And in the movie, Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann, who play husband and wife Pete and Debbie, are both turning 40. Debbie is more resistant to the big birthday.
Isn't it weird that our birthday is the same week and then we're going to have a party and it's just for me?
No, I don't think it's weird at all. Because you're turning 40 and I'm turning 38.
Come on, do you really want to be one of those ladies who's just so insecure about their age and they lie and then they gotta remember and it gets all...
You don't get it. See, you don't understand how it works. I don't want to shop at old lady stores. I don't want to go to J. Jill and Chico's and Ann Taylor Loft. I'm not ready yet. I need 2 more years.
That is so insane. It kind of makes sense.
I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation, someone else who has been thinking about this. Joining me now in studio is Beth Tytel, features writer for the Boston Globe. You can find a link to her story headline, The New Insult, Calling Someone Middle-Aged, Even or Especially If They Are, at our website, onpointradio.org. Beth, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. I have so many thoughts. Okay, a couple things. One, I was thinking, why is it actually an insult to be called middle-aged if you are? This is what I realized. It's as if turning middle-aged is your fault. Like, if you'd been paying more attention, if you'd had a stronger character, you wouldn't have let things get so out of hand. Like, how's Beth? Ugh, she let herself go. She's middle-aged. But also getting to what Pamela was talking about, there's a real distinction. In this country, there's sort of a war afoot. It's a war on aging, and hostilities are escalating. It's on one hand, it's true that 40 is the new 30, but it's not really doing us any good because at the same time, 30 is the new 40, and it's never too early for a preventative procedure or 5. It's like these days trying to appear young is a full-time job. There are teeth to bleach, anti-aging hair masks to apply, frown lines to freeze. If you're doing things right, you'll actually look younger today than you did yesterday and even more youthful by tomorrow. It's sort of mind-boggling the amount of work it takes to simply appear well-rested, which is a look no longer achieved through actual rest.
Yeah. Pamela, what do you think about this? Does this mirror your thoughts and your experiences?
I know exactly what Beth means, and that's why it was kind of a relief to see the French model. You know, they have Botox, too. They're definitely, you know, nobody minds if they look younger than they are. But they have a saying, which is trying to look young is the fastest way to look old. And I think that's actually true, because you look a little bit panicked.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's about feeling comfortable in yourself and not looking like you're trying too hard, right?
Right.
All right. Sunny is calling from Baltimore. Sunny, thanks for calling today.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm 46, living here in Baltimore, and I think, being considered middle-aged isn't so much of a, derogatory or a bad word. I think it's something that, as a 40-year-old in the 40s, I think we just got to accept that. And I think also being in the 40s, it's a unique age where you've had 20 years, most people start to life at age 20. They're going to school, having kids and having family. Then 20 years from now, then you pretty much got your life established to a point where you're pretty much like a manager or a major decision-making position in society in a way. So the way I see it, a lot of younger generation kind of look at us and me as like, okay, as guidance, we're somewhat a role model. Then the older generations, retirees kind of look at us kind of like, okay, what are you going to do for us? We're passing the baton to you guys to carry on, what needs to be done in society for for good reasons. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Sunny. Beth, I want to ask you about that. Do we have these sort of 20-year markers where we're getting out of school and then 20 years later we kind of have things together and 20 years after that we're thinking about the rest of our lives?
Yeah, that's right. I think people are so eager to label which group you're in. And one funny thing about middle age, it's a group that nobody wants to join. And then the sad part is, as you're heading out of it, you really wish you were still in it. Like, it's a compliment to be called middle-aged at some point. The thing is, there are a lot of second acts in America. I think middle-aged needs to rebrand itself, to kind of reintroduce itself to the American people, in the same way that Dunkin' is experimenting with getting rid of donuts and some vegans are calling themselves plant-based and meditation has gone to mindfulness and has left the ashram for the boardroom. So I talk to a lot of people for this story about how can we make middle-aged, because you are going to turn whatever age it is, more acceptable. So a woman in Maryland who's 52 came up with a great term, mid-century modern. She said it was an idea born of disappointment with the term middle age, which she called an anchor, and appreciation for the current decorating craze. She said it's sort of how we need to refer to ourselves. It's entering this time of our lives, we want to project that sense of self-assurance and clean simplicity, which I loved. Somebody else said, why don't we just do away with that category altogether? We're going to have two categories for the whole of life. You're either old or you're young. And the thing is, I like that, but it's high stakes. Like, where would that line be drawn? You know, that's kind of scary.
No, that's definitely true. And I don't know, at the word century anywhere in a descriptor of me, I think would be very difficult for me to handle. Pamela, what do you think about that? Do we need new words, new definitions, new phrases for this?
You know, we can keep moving the bar. In the women's magazines now, they say midlife women, which is a strange descriptor. But I want to make a case for the fact that, and Judd Apatow obviously thought this too, that the 40s and that midlife is hilarious and that we should at least have more of a sense of humor about it. You know, I read somewhere someone saying that humor is putting people in circumstances that they're just not prepared to handle. And I thought, well, that's what midlife is. You know, you've risen to this new stage of life. Everyone thinks you're a grown up and you have no idea what you're doing. You're winging it just like everybody else. So I think more stories about what it's really like and what we feel like inside is a necessity, regardless of what we call it.
I want to talk a little bit about how midlife, middle age, whatever euphemism you want to use, has changed, or the perception of it has changed over the decades. In the 1980s, this TV commercial featuring Dynasty actress Linda Evans assured women that getting older was not the end of the world.
Let's face it, 40 isn't fatal. I feel I'm the best I've ever been. One reason is Altress, new from Clairol.
40 isn't fatal. Beth, I don't know when 40 was fatal, but apparently by the 80s it wasn't fatal, at least not if you dyed your hair and covered
that
gray.
That's right.
How have we changed over the last several decades?
That's such a good question. I think in some ways we've changed because people are doing so much. There's a lot of pressure in our society to look good no matter what age you are. I mean, it used to be, let's say when you were pregnant, you were off duty. You could wear something loose. Now, my God, even when you're pregnant, you have to look hot. It's like, it's exhausting. And it's the same thing, I think, right now for what age we're in. Even though they're saying, oh, 40 is fine. It's like my morning cleansing, clarifying, restoring, reversing, rejuvenating, regenerating, brightening, tightening, toning, lifting, hydrating, defending, defying, correcting, concealing, smoothing, plumping, minimizing routine takes so long that when I'm done, it's almost night and time to begin the ritual again. So we have all this language like it's okay, but as Pamela's daughter said, you know, you're not old, but you're not young. And I think in some ways we can all fool ourselves and say, oh my God, you still look like you're in high school. But to the young people, we still look a certain age, let's just say.
So Frankie is calling from Easton, Massachusetts. Hi there, Frankie.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great.
Today.
I'm great. You're on with Pamela and Beth. Go ahead.
Awesome. Well, Pamela, I did read your book early on about Bebe, so I just want to give you a shout-out about that. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Yes, I look forward to reading this book. I recently turned 50, and I just recall that going into my 30s and, you know, living the life, and I was educated, got my master's, got the decent job. I'm an educator. You know, and, of course, it was a challenging time, of course, going through those 40s. But, you know, it's interesting. Turning 50, you know, I cleaned my act up. I started eating organically. I got into mindfulness and yoga kind of when I was about 43. So the last 7 years, I even stopped drinking. Big step in life. And I really have come to my own. And now, honestly, you know, things just fall into place when you really start taking care of yourself and you take care of your mind and you take care of your body in a real positive way. You know, things just really begin to become clearer in life. And I work with kids, and, you know, a kid told me yesterday, he said, Mr. Perez, I like you because you're so young. Mm. You act so young. And I think that's the other piece you were just talking about. Yeah. It's about having fun as well in life. I make sure I smile every day. I make sure I have fun with my loved ones and my wife and people that are around me. And I think that's what people need to understand.
And Frankie, thank you so much for that call. So we're talking about how we feel and the things that we do to make ourselves feel good. But Pamela, talk a little bit about how in our 40s, our relationships change, whether it's with our significant others or even our friendships. What factors come into play there?
Well, I mean, I think the caller is really onto something that, you know, in the previous part of your life, you feel like you're passing through milestones and you're preparing for real life and people are cheering you on and you're getting ready for this thing that you will one day do. And you're telling yourself these stories about what you're going to be one day and what you're good at. And in your 40s, you've reached this stage that is, it is undeniably real life. It's the thing itself. It's happening right now. And that causes you to kind of throw away a lot of the kind of fantasies you've been saying, you know, I'm going to write a book one day, or I'm attracted to women, or I'm, you know, like people just say, you know what, this is who I am, and I'm going to follow who I am right now. And it's a big relief, and it makes people a lot easier to be around and easier to socialize with them. I remember at my high school reunions when I was in my 20s and my 30s, people were jealous, they were competitive, they were trying to prove their status. By the 40s, my high school reunions were such a pleasure. Everyone just wanted to have a good time and relax. And you even see psychological research that shows that people are more considerate in their 40s. They're nicer. They're easier to be around. And it's easier to socialize with people when you're not pretending to be something that you're not. You've kind of wrestled with your demons. And hopefully, if all goes well, you've emerged as who you really are.
Yeah, I mean, as I get older, I make better decisions about who I bring in my life, who I keep in my life. Do we do friendships and relationships better as we get older, Beth?
Pamela, that resonates so much with me and Kimberly, too. I think that is true with friendships. There's that competitive aspect is lost in such a nice way. And you're just so much more appreciative for your friends because you realize how valuable they are and just how wonderful. Some of my best friends to this day are women I met in eighth grade and talked to almost every day. And it's just sometimes I think, is there something wrong with me? Why am I still talking to Jenny and Sue from eighth grade? But it's such a pleasure.
Yeah. With me, I used to think, well, I have to look at all possible people and decide who would be the best ones to be my friends. It was almost like, I want to see all the shoes and then I'll decide which shoes I want to buy. And in my 40s, when I meet someone I like and we get along great, I'm so happy. I'm so grateful to have someone that I kind of cling to them. Yeah. And I also know, you know, in your 40s that not everyone you adore stays in your life. People pass through. You might have a wonderful evening with them and you never see them again. And that's just kind of the way life is. So you hold on less tightly to people. But at the same time, you appreciate them more.
Dana is calling from Baltimore. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Kim. You know, my comment has to do with women having children a little bit later. Actually, women and men having children later. I'm 41. My husband's 43. And, you know, we've had kind of a very long struggle with fertility. But the recent news that came out about the birth rate was really encouraging to me, that the only age group where the birth rate has gone up in America was women in their early 40s.
Yes,
and
it's doubled.
Even though a lot of
the birth rate has doubled for women in their early 40s since 1990.
I know, and it just made me so happy to hear that, because I was like, I'm not alone. And you know, a lot of my friends had children in their later 30s, but still, when we go to parties, you know, we're kind of the only one in our age group that doesn't have kids yet. But you know, we're still working on it. We're still hopeful. And actually, we're excited to be starting a family at this age because we do feel kind of wiser and just more, you know ourselves better at this age.
Dana, wiser and richer.
Yeah, Dana, thanks so much for that call. I mean, Pamela, when my mom had me, she was 32 and everyone was telling her how old she was to be doing this. It's completely different now.
It turns out that those statistics about how if you don't have a baby by 35, your chances are practically nil were based on 17th and 18th century birth records. And they predated antibiotics and not to mention IVF. So women in their 40s, and especially in their early 40s, I'm not guaranteeing anyone a baby, but we're much more fertile than we thought. We used to think when someone managed to have a baby at 42, she was a crazy outlier with great genes. But it turns out many more people can do that than we thought.
Beth Tytel, features writer for the Boston Globe, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And we're going to have Pamela hold on because we're still talking about coming of age, whether we like the number or not. I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point.
Planet Money tip number 17. A great analogy doesn't have to make sense.
Busier than a one-legged bobcat covering up his own crap on a frozen pond.
Didn't you just make that up?
Well, yeah. Just...
Planet Money, a poetic podcast about the economy.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're talking about getting older and finding our places in the world. You can join the conversation. How do you maintain your friendships as time passes? What wisdom about aging can you share with us? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're joined today by Pamela Druckerman, author of There Are No Grown-Ups, a midlife coming-of-age story. So, Pamela, in your book, you write about not just your relationship with friends, but also with your husband and how some things change. You bring up one birthday wish that your husband had. Now, I know from my perspective, I probably would have dealt with that very differently in my 20s than maybe in my 40s or later. Talk a little bit about that and how your age informed you.
Well, when my husband was on the cusp of turning 40, I said, well, why don't I get you a nice watch for your birthday? That would be a grown-up present. And he said, that's not what I want. And he told me what he really wants for his birthday is, okay, I'm just going to say this on the radio, a threesome with me and another woman.
Oh, my.
And because I'm a journalist and I can't resist a deadline, I said, okay, let's do it. And so thus began my journey into the 40s. I ended up writing about this experience for a women's magazine. At one point, I said, am I under contract to have a threesome with you for your 40th birthday? But it ended up being... as a kind of sexual experience, it was okay. But as a literary experience, it was fantastic because I learned something that a lot of people learn in their 40s, which is how to be themselves, in my case, on the page. I stopped writing like this authoritative journalist who knew everything. And I just explained my own perspective very clearly about what had happened. And that I still try to write in that voice and try to have that level of honesty with myself and about my own experiences.
And sort of relatedly, again, to compare Americans to the French, is there a different approach to sex in general after 40 that the French take as opposed to the way we think of it here?
Well, there's this idea in America that if you're not young and firm and beautiful, you're not entitled to sex. And then once your body no longer looks like it does in perfume advertisements, then you have to kind of close up shop. And in France, there's this idea that all healthy adults have sexual relationships throughout their lives, no matter what they look like and no matter what, you know, and it's, you know, they are entitled to that, just part of life. So there, and you see that there's really a difference in behavior. If you look at 50 and 60 year old French women's sexual behavior compared to American women, there's almost double the rate of sexual activity among 50 year old French women that there is among American women, because we buy the story that our culture tells us about ourselves. It affects our most intimate relationships.
All right. Although she wasn't 40 quite yet when she made her journey, author Elizabeth Gilbert inspired many when she spent a year traveling the world, and she detailed that experience in her memoir, Eat, Pray, Love. In this 2014 event hosted by Minnesota Public Radio, Gilbert talks about growing older and what she learned.
We're just taught, like reinforced constantly, like to fear aging, that it's the worst thing that could ever possibly happen to a woman, when it totally seems to be the dead opposite. It is the best thing that happens to women. And I said this on Twitter the other day. I like don't fear getting older, but I do fear that someday a wicked, evil genie will make me go and live my 20s all over again. Because that would be the very worst thing that could ever happen in my entire life.
Pamela, are we fretting about the wrong period of our lives?
I don't think it's quite as black and white as she would like to have it, but I think there are wonderful things about being in your 40s. And there's a level of, you know, we have this story about the midlife crisis and looking older. And in fact, they're on a social level, on a sort of level of awareness. We are so much more aware of what's happening now and able to interact with other people. And, you know, the Buddhists say that being aware of what's going around you is one of life's great pleasure. It's the true source of enduring happiness. And I think you have that in your 40s. But what you become aware of isn't necessarily positive. I sometimes describe the 40s as a journey from everyone hates me to they don't really care about you. People are focused on themselves. But just knowing that is a bit of a relief.
Yeah. Stuart is calling from Lake Placid, New York. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, how are you?
Great, great. You're on with Pamela Druckerman.
Hi. Listen, I have a rather unique story, and I say it's unique because nobody else that I've spoken to has done it since I did it the first time. What happened was when I was married to my first wife, just a few months before I was due to turn 40, she was afraid that I was going to do something crazy, like cheat or buy a car I couldn't afford, you know, or whatever. So she decided to send me to a nudist camp about 3 hours south of where we live. It was her idea, too. So, and I have to say, in a nutshell, I'm not going to go into too much detail, obviously, but in a nutshell, if you want to feel better about the way you look, I think it'll work at just about any age, go to a nudist camp. Because I was there for 3 days, and by the time I left there, I felt like Brad Pitt walking out of that place. You know, I got to say, it was a great booster because
you have to choose the right nudist colony, I think.
Yeah, well, I did, and I became very, very dear friends with the owner. Her name was Carol, and she became like a sister because I kept going back. Because every time I went back, I felt better and better. Because I always saw somebody else who looked so much worse than me. I'm like, some of them were younger, too. Some were younger than me. I'm like, how did that happen?
You know? Well, thanks for that call, Stuart. I mean, maybe we don't all have to go to a nudist camp, but sometimes we have that experience when we go to, say, the beach for the first time in the season and you really fret about wearing that bathing suit. And once you get there, you realize everybody's human and you were really making a mountain out of a molehill. Is that sort of a similar thing, Pamela?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of pressure, especially in American culture, to talk about and focus on, for women, all the things they dislike about their bodies. And, you know, I'm so fat. No, you're not fat. I'm fatter. There's literally something called fat talk, which scientists now study now. And that keeps you from actually seeing yourself and knowing what your good points are, what your strong points are. So when you go to get dressed, especially in your 40s, when you've changed a little bit, you don't know what suits you. You don't know what to wear. You don't really know who you are. And, you know, people also say, you know, I'm 50, but I really feel 35. And you're always kind of like moving the bar and you're not sure who you really are inside. And I think calming those voices, knowing what your good points are and playing to those, playing to your strengths, embracing that there are great things about yourself, feeling your age, saying, you know, I'm 48 or I'm 55, and that is who I am, and being the best version of the age that you are has a real calming effect. You know, it certainly helps you get dressed in the morning. I discovered in my 40s that I have really lovely ankles. I really like my ankles. I wear only short pants now. And, you know, I own up to my ankles. I'm willing to show them off.
Greg is calling from Rapid City, South Dakota. Hi there, Greg.
Hi. Hi, Kim. Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
I was always one of those lucky people who look young for my age. I'd tell people my age and their jaw would drop. And then eventually when I got about 60, my aging started to occur. But I noticed younger men referring to me as sir, and it was kind of cool. Also, that I had to be a little bit careful of being overly friendly with women in their 20s because of that perceived creep factor that comes in. So those two things were happening. I think in my late 40s and 50s, when that midlife issue came up, I just felt grown up.
Huh.
Didn't really go through a crisis, but it was nice not having to struggle with, you know, the uncertainties of immaturity.
Thanks for that call, Greg. Pamela, what do you think about that?
I think that's the strangest part of entering your 40s is you are the grown-up. You're treated like one. And but what's nice is that eventually you do start to feel like one. You know, you realize you can judge situations. You can calm someone down. You can decide when something is ridiculous or not. You know, there are definitely negatives, and looking older can be disconcerting. The French have this great word for it. When you look the same for a long period of time and then suddenly you look much older, they call it a coup de vieux, an age blow.
Okay. You know, on a related note, in a recent interview with Terry Gross on NPR's Fresh Air, writer David Sedaris read an excerpt from his book in which he declared that there are few real joys to middle age.
Okay, so I'm going to mention your age. You're 61. What are some of the things you are not enjoying about getting older?
Well, I feel like if I robbed a bank, this would be the perfect time to do it. Because when the police said, what did he look like? They'd say, he had gray hair. That's all people see after you're a certain age is that you have gray hair.
So earlier we played that Linda Evans clip about, you know, 40 isn't fatal as long as you dye your hair. And we still have this gray hair thing going on the way people perceive us. What do you think, Pamela?
You know, I think that, you know, 40 still has this symbolic meaning to people, even though it's, you know, much earlier in the lifespan than it used to be. You know, the Muhammad, Jesus fasted for 40 days. The Israelites wandered the desert for 40 years. You know, that no matter where it is in the lifespan, turning 40 still feels heavy to people.
Yeah. So you are a cancer survivor. How has that experience impacted your view of aging?
I am glad to be my age. I'm glad to have survived. I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was 41, and I had three little kids, and it was a I was grateful to survive that experience. And I think for me, it definitely deepened my appreciation for what I had. It didn't make me want to change anything in my life. It wanted me to just appreciate it all even more.
So talk about some of the other challenges at this point in life. Maybe challenge is too hard a word, but just experiences that you have, you know, making your marriage last and keeping it strong and raising children as they grow bigger. What do your experiences in your 40s help inform those things?
Well, the philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer said that the first 40 years provide the text and the last 30 provide the commentary. And I think that's what the 40s are in a way. You look at your life, you look at the same things you've looked at your whole life, but you see them differently. You see more and more in them. You see new things. So a friend of mine said every marriage is a remarriage. And I think, you know, in your 40s and midlife, if you've been with someone for a while, you start to see them differently. And one thing that I learned from the French is that it's a very good idea to study your spouse and understand their qualities more. And that, you know, my French friends would say to me, you know, there's nothing wrong with my spouse because they sort of saw, well, they had studied their partners and seen that there are paired qualities. For everything good, there's something bad. And that what they really loved was the whole picture, the whole character. And I think, you know, if your relationship survives, you know, into its sort of second decade, you begin to see the whole person more, and you see your family of origin differently. You kind of stop blaming your parents for all your flaws. You mm-hmm. have a lot more sympathy for your parents at this age, partly because they're older and weaker.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick is calling from Harrisonburg, Virginia. Hi there, Patrick.
Hi, everybody.
Go ahead. You're on with Pamela Druckerman.
Okay. Yeah. So I just turned 40, and one of the things that I found, in my mid-30s, I went through a pretty rough divorce. I got three kids, and I started school. I started college at 36 years old. And one of the things that I found, you know, going back into that environment now as an older person, is that I am significantly more confident and more understanding of my capabilities and able to perform those type of, you know, SWOT analysis on myself and not only help myself, but help other people and be more confident that not worry so much about what other people are thinking of me and able to more confidently approach personal relationships and professional relationships and just enjoy life more.
Great. Thank you so much for that call, Patrick. Pamela, what do you think about that? Reinventing ourselves in some way in our 40s, whether it's going back to school or doing something else, is that sort of a new way to approach a quote-unquote midlife crisis?
Well, I noticed a lot of people that I spoke to in their 40s saying they changed their lives in their 40s, that they changed careers, they started doing the thing. You know, I had this one friend who had been saying for 10 years that she was writing a novel. And even though we all knew she really wasn't writing the novel, when she turned 40, she said, you know what? I'm not writing a novel. I'm going to become a jewelry designer because that's what I've been doing on the side anyway. I had another friend who divorced her husband. She said, you know what? I'm not attracted to men. And now she's married to a woman. And so it is this moment where people feel like it's real life and now or never, and they might as well do it. But it's also a moment where people kind of, you know, I realized in my 40s, like, I'm just never going to be a good cook. Like, I keep buying cookbooks. There's never going to be a time when I sit down and do that. But it's partly, maybe there will be eventually. I won't rule it out forever. But the 40s, more than anything, are busy. There's one psychologist called it the rush hour of life. You have, you know, children on one end and your parents on the other, this famous sandwich generation, and you don't have time. Forget about a midlife crisis. Like, nobody I know has been to the movies in about a decade.
All right. Well, Pamela Druckerman, author of There Are No Grown-Ups, A Midlife Coming-of-Age Story. It was such a pleasure to have you.
Thanks so much for having me on, Kim.
And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Herdzinski, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, Catherine Proctor, Tanya Rally, Jeremy Relosa, and James Ross. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.